This episode of A Few Things with Claire and Erica is brought to you by the wonderful people at Bye Bye Baby. You should find one of their stores or go to buybuybaby.com if you know any babies.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to A Few Things with Claire and Erica, our podcast.
I'm Erica.
And I'm Claire.
And this podcast, if you can believe it, is based on a newsletter that we send called 10 Things. We send it every Monday, sometimes enthusiastically, sometimes begrudgingly. And it's a roundup of all of our favorite discoveries, from recipes to apps to books to lip balms.
It's true. You can sign up for that newsletter at ofakind.com, where you can also discover beautiful, well-made products from emerging designers all over the U.S. of A. Things that have been handpicked by us, commissioned by us, exclusively for sale on our website. I think we have pretty good taste.
Oh, for sure. And they all come with a story. And the story is free.
Yeah. You can have the story even if you don't buy the thing. Yeah. That's how generous we are.
Yeah, it's very kind of us.
Yes.
So guess what? This is the last episode of A Few Things with Claire and Erica, Season 2.
Oh, my God.
Season 2. We've done over 40 episodes of this show total, if you can even believe it.
I would say our sophomore season was a success.
I think so, too.
Yeah. And Season 3 is going to be even better.
Can't even wait. We were brainstorming earlier today some Season 3 ideas, and I think we might even start to seem like professionals.
I
don't want to get ahead of myself.
I think it's going to be like, so Quantico just went on mid-season hiatus, yeah. And they're in their first season, but they went on like the winter hiatus, and they came back, and it was like, the production value just had skyrocketed. It was like everybody's skin looked 10 times better.
Yeah,
everybody's
yeah.
clothes were more expensive. It was like the lighting was better.
Do you remember with Gossip Girl how like yes. after season one, they came back to season two and you're like, whoa.
You got even richer.
Yeah, you got even richer. You're all like, yeah, you all got Botox.
Yes.
Everybody looks real together.
So we're going to come back on season three with so much Botox. And the lighting's going to be amazing.
So good. Oh yes. My God, you won't believe it.
Exactly.
So something that we've added for season two is hashtag reading things,
yes.
the Of a Kind book club. Mm-hmm. And we've done two books so far, mm-hmm. both of which we loved. I know what's going to happen at some point. We're going to read a book that we don't love.
Like. Yeah.
But
it's okay.
Our batting average right now we're batting 1,000.
It's great.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. So we're going to share up some book ideas to kind of tide people over until our next reading thing, because we're not announcing it until season three.
That's right.
So we put together each a list of three books that we've read recently and really loved, and three that are on our reading list for between now
slash
and next time we see
actually on my Kindle, because while I was researching this, I got like click happy and just bought a bunch of books.
Yeah, which is good. Buying books is good.
Satisfying.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So what have you read recently that you've been way into?
Oh, I thought you were going first. Okay.
We can ping pong, too.
Okay.
You do one, I'll do one.
Okay, great. Okay, I loved Portable Veblen. I actually don't think this is for everyone. It's a weird book. It's like fractured fairy tale meets rom-com meets like liberal criticism of big pharma. But I really enjoyed it. It's got this really quirky, weird main character whose name is Veblen, who is named after a philosopher, of like obscure philosopher, who falls in love with this scientist who's an academic who takes a job at a big pharmaceutical company. She also is obsessed with this squirrel and thinks it's her best friend and talks to it all the time. He gets caught up in a crazy sort of like scandal with the pharmaceutical company he works for. They get engaged. It's just got a lot going on. I found it like very fun and entertaining and adventurous. And weird. It's really weird.
I like that.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, so sticking to rom-com, mm-hmm. I just read Eligible by
Curtis
Sittenfeld.
I really
want to read
this. It's on my bookshelf.
This is the sort of modern retelling of Pride and Prejudice. And obviously, Pride and Prejudice has been retold a million times, mm-hmm. but I have not read those retellings, so I can't really speak to them. But Curtis Sittenfeld is just such an amazing writer.
Well, her first big thing was Prep.
Prep, which you've mm-hmm. probably, if you haven't read, you've seen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It has like the ribbon belt on the cover.
Right.
And then American Wife, which is something else I read recently and loved, which is kind of, it's like a fake memoir of Laura Bush.
Yeah. which feels highly entertaining. But it feels like writing that well primed her to write a retelling of Pride and Prejudice. It's like same type of weird inside the head retelling the story.
Exactly. So what works about this is that she keeps the same kind of prim tone and approach to telling this story, even though it's set in 2013, as Jane Austen does. So, like, even the sex scenes, she just, like, kind of talks around things in a very specific and very funny way. Mr. Bennet is, like, a similarly hilarious character. He classically is, and she does a very good job of translating all of that. So here are, like, the things that sort of make it very 2013. It involves a spoof on The Bachelor. Mr. Darcy is a neurosurgeon. Jane is trying to get pregnant via sperm donor.
Amazing.
And the two youngest daughters are way into CrossFit.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's really, it sounds really good. It's really highly entertaining. It's long, but it's also fast. And I was just recommending to my mom the other day because the chapters are really short. They're like 1 to 4 pages.
Oh,
so it's good right before bed reading, too.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yes.
Good, good. All right. The other one that I read recently was Citizen, which is nothing like either of the books we just discussed.
Definitely not.
It is by Claudia Rankine. It is a meditation on race in America in like the 2010s that we're in, basically.
And it's like poetry, right?
And
which has scared me from reading it, but I know it shouldn't because of everything I've heard.
I mean, yeah, thank God that no one told me it was poetry before I read it, because I wouldn't have read it. And it was actually a funny experience where I was reading it and I was like, this is like, has kind of poetic elements to it. And like feeling like, this is like feeling kind of poetry-ish. And then like halfway through, like Googled more about it because I got really into it. And I was like, oh, this is like under the poetry category. But it's narrative poetry in a way. It's like, it feels like a mix between a personal essay and poetry. And at certain points, it doesn't feel like poetry at all.
Okay.
But it is very personal. It feels very theatrical in a way. Like it almost sometimes feels like you're watching a play. And she's retelling a lot of stories sort of in the first or second person of her own personal experiences dealing with race. She is a Black woman. I should mention that. It's relevant. There is a really compelling chapter on Serena Williams.
I'll read anything about Serena Williams.
It's such a compelling way that she tells the story and sort of brings to light the way that Serena has been painted in the media and brings that
the way that her body's talked about.
Exactly.
And
tying it back to race. And Serena Williams, like when you read about this, you're like, right, she's been around for so long. Like we were kids when she entered the spotlight, and you sort of looking at it through how the conversation around race has changed during Serena's career is really fascinating. And the book has a lot more beyond Serena Williams. It's really good. A lot of people say it's a really good companion piece to the Ta-Nehisi Coates book, which I have not read. But I just really, really enjoyed it both as like an educational piece, a piece of art, a sort of academic piece. She also, Claudia Rankine, also wrote this really sort of amazing article in the New York Times Magazine on Serena Williams. So the chapter in her book almost feels like the sort of like poetry companion
to that
article.
Yeah.
If you've read it, and if you haven't read it, read that.
It's really compelling. For sure. Yeah. Okay, something that is much lighter than that, I think, for sure, is Packing for Mars.
That seems intimidating.
It does seem pretty heavy. Yeah. It is by this author, Mary Roach.
I'm such a fangirl.
You know what? I recently, like 2 nights ago, I watched a Colbert Report episode of her from 2005. That is how much I like her.
Wow.
Word for the wise, don't watch 2005 Colbert episodes because they are not that funny.
Wow, really?
10 years, like that's a lot. He was really just like coming. Okay. Yeah, it's early. It was really, I don't know if it was his first.
But is it not as funny because the stuff, it's so topical and it's not relevant? Okay, it's just not period, not funny.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. I believe you.
It was like season one of a few things.
That was a good singer.
Thank you. Okay, so Mary Roach is a science writer. I'm not such a big science person, but she just does such a good job of, she goes deep on topics and she goes weird.
Yeah.
So the first book I read of hers was Gulp, and it's all about the human digestive system. Mm-hmm. The second one was called Stiff, and it's about cadavers.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that she makes cadavers just like weird and funny. And the one I read most recently, Packing for Mars, is about space travel, but it's about the most weird and mundane parts of space travel. So she'll be like, okay, so how exactly do you go to the bathroom? And like talk about like all that. She basically asks all the questions, Claire, that you would ask someone who was an astronaut.
That's the best not to be the total narcissist that I am in such a blatant way, but I'm like, that's the best sell you've given me on this author, because I do have a lot of questions that other people don't have in
these
scenarios.
It's a lot of like, she does a lot of, but yeah. wait. But
right.
wait,
okay, good, good.
She gets
okay.
really deep into motion sickness, yeah. okay. And she tries to solve the mystery of whether people have had sex in space. And there's like some conversations with the porn industry, and there's like a lot of wow. she goes deep. She thinks,
you just did a really good sell for this book. I'm in.
It's super good. It's also funny. It's just okay. like one of these books that you laugh during okay. and you actually learn something, okay. which I like.
Good. Okay, the other one is a book that I read a long time ago. Well, not even that long ago, like a year ago, but is relevant
yet
again.
It's timely.
It's timely. So Big Little Lies is a book by Leanne Moriarty. It's so good. It's long, but in a really like...
It's so quick.
It's
yeah.
quick. It feels like light. It's about a preschool in Australia and sort of all of the gossip and craziness between the parents. And it's hilarious. It's really smart. It's got a sort of elements of mystery, sort of like
it's
thriller.
Dark comedy.
Yeah, yeah. It is. It's dark comedy. It also touches on really serious things like domestic violence in a way that I thought was so well done. I just, yeah. I loved the book in every way. There are so many super smart lines. Right after I finished it, I got the best news that Reese Witherspoon's production company was turning it into an HBO miniseries. Nicole Kidman is in it. I think a bunch of really big deal people are in it. So when
Wait, there's somebody young in it too, right?
Me, probably
like Shailene or something.
Oh, yeah,
that's
find
yeah, out that
yeah,
Shailene Woodley's
Shailene
in it.
Woodley's
yeah.
in it.
Yeah.
So Eric and I, when we were in LA, the house where we were staying every day would run by the school, and it's like hilarious in fancy LA neighborhoods to run by elementary schools and see what drop off looks like, because it's so different.
You're way
from what
into
you and
the drop off scene.
So I would come back every day and be like, Erica. So there was a mom in like a black sheath dress wearing a crossing guard thing over the black sheath dress and her Jenny Kane flats.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
and it was amazing. But then one day the school went on spring break and a movie crew took over, or film crew, and so then every day I would come back and I'd be like, well, there's like security guards with big guns, but I can't figure out what they're filming. And then finally, like my last day there, I go on my run and they're filming, and I can tell because a major plot point is spelled out on the school sort of like the big display monitor. That
yeah,
says,
yeah, yeah. The announcement thing.
Yeah. And it's like PTA meeting coming up and trivia night with Audrey and Elvis, which is a key point.
Yeah.
I stopped everything to Snapchat about it with Erica. Be like, oh my God.
It's happening.
They're filming Big Little Lies right here. So read the book now, because
you're going to want to see this.
You're going to want to see the miniseries, and I think that it is going to be
And it's going to be a miniseries?
Yes.
I love... Yeah, that's so much better. I'm so... You know, the OJ... People versus OJ Simpson
so
we talk
good.
About so much,
yeah.
but, like, I just love a miniseries right now.
I'm with you, and I just think, I know, like, listen, you can totally watch the thing without having read the book, but I think this is going to be one of those ones where it will be so much more satisfying if you've read the book to be like, oh, they totally nailed that, or, you know, this isn't how I pictured it. So, so, so psyched for that to happen.
My last one that I've read recently that I've loved, I think would make a really good movie and should be optioned if it hasn't already been. It's mm-hmm. called Everything, Everything. It's a debut novel by Nicola Yoon, and it is young adult. I read a lot of young adult,
yeah.
and we've talked about this on the show before, mm-hmm. that like, why is young adult its own category? But
right.
I'm basically just saying you could recommend it to a 12-year-old and it'd be fine.
Right.
But I'm still going to read it as an adult. So it is about basically a bubble girl who's mm-hmm. allergic to everything in the world, who falls in love with the boy next door.
A bubble girl, like
the she
John
can't
Travolta.
Leave her house.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Like she can't.
But she's okay. But she's not in a bubble. But she's not like actually in a
no,
bubble.
No,
okay.
She's just in like a sterilized house that the air, all of the air in the house is circulated out every 24 hours or something.
Okay.
Or maybe even less than that. And she lives with her mom, and she has like a nurse who's there.
Okay.
Every single day, who tutors mm-hmm. her, and she's very smart and engaged, and but she falls in love with a boy next door whose window her window faces.
Okay.
So there's like that thing happening. So it's really charming, but then there are also curveballs and things that you wouldn't see coming, and it's not just like a straight like coming of age puppy okay. love story situation. And when I was reading it, I stood on a subway platform for like 10 minutes to finish it, because I just like had to see.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really good.
So good.
Okay. What are you excited to read?
So many things. Okay. currently on my Kindle, I have all the single ladies, which there's a trend here. This was excerpted in a big way in New York Magazine recently. It's by Rebecca Traister, who is also just really having moments.
She's a badass.
And she's been really killing it lately. She also did a really good interview with Marcia Clark. Unrelated to all of this, but she's a feminist writer, and she's just so excellent at what she does. So All the Single Ladies is about basically this concept that there are more single women now than there have ever been, and they are having a huge impact on, you know, all parts of life, you know, the economy, but particularly politics, and they will have a big influence over this election cycle, and, you know, why there are so many single women, because there's just not the pressure to marry in the same way that there used to be, and a lot of women are happily opting out of marriage. She also wrote a book about the 2008 election cycle called Big Girls Don't Cry.
And it was about Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton and all of the way that they were portrayed and that craziness.
And in a lot of ways, I'm more interested to read that book. I mean, both of them have implications for the current election cycle, but I'm very sort of interested in that, just as it applies to where Hillary is now and how we think about women in politics now. So it's obviously nonfiction. But yeah, very, very excited to read those.
Speaking of marriage, one of mine is called Marriage, A History, which is, first of all, just really good title.
So good.
It's by a woman.
Marriage: A History.
Well, marriage, comma, A History.
Oh.
And then there is a colon that has further explanation.
Okay, got it.
By Stephanie Kuntz. Mm-hmm. And it is, not surprisingly, about the history of marriage, and addresses the fact that love only became part of that history over the last 200 years.
So such a good companion piece to All the Single Ladies.
That's right. For sure.
Wow. Into it. Okay, so the other one that I'm going to go with something
gears.
Lighter.
Yeah.
Now, Ways to Disappear by Idra Novi. I'm probably mispronouncing it. It's about a famous Brazilian writer who disappears, and then her American translator, who lives in Pittsburgh, goes to Brazil to try to find her, and like works with her kids to try to find her. And basically, the description said two things. That it said, one, that it was noirish, and I'm like, I love a noirish book.
Yeah.
I love a thriller. Anything that's described as a thriller, I'm in. It also said, if I liked Where'd You Go, Bernadette, I like this. And that's when I was totally in, because Where'd You Go, Bernadette was just so good.
Okay. Following right on the back of that.
Yeah.
This next book was described to me as sliding doors for teenagers. Sliding Doors is for sure one of my favorite movies.
It's amazing.
It's called Two Summers by Amy Friedman. And it's basically like, what happens if our protagonist spends her summer in the French countryside?
Oh my gosh,
or what
amazing.
Happens if our protagonist spends her summer in upstate New York? And can I be that protagonist?
Stop. This is so good.
This is
obviously a YA book.
Yeah.
Okay. So going on your question of like, why are things categorized as YA? The next book that I really want to read, that I've been hearing a lot of buzz about from people who are very in the know in the publishing industry.
Yep.
It's called What Belongs to You. It's by Garth Greenwell. And it takes place in Bulgaria. It's about an American teacher who goes to a museum, meets a prostitute, and starts engaging him for sex, and then keeps going back to him and developing this relationship. So it is in it, and it's, you know, the teacher is from the American South, so he's based in, you know, has very traditional understanding of sex and all of this.
Yeah.
But the really interesting conversation that I had over dinner about this book is that it's doing really, really well, which is really surprising because it's queer and it's erotic. And and the person who I was speaking with was just so excited about how well it was doing and sort of like breaking out of this genre, which tends to like typically just be, you know, read by people
who identify
in that way.
Yeah.
And so then we had this really interesting conversation about like why are certain books labeled as queer literature, and you know, what would be the argument for doing it? Is it just a marketing thing to try to speak to that audience in particular, or, you know, would it be better not, you know, marketing in that way? And obviously, if I were to tell you about a book about a heterosexual romance, I would never say it's a straight romance.
It's a rom-com, right? Yeah.
And you other it by saying, you know, well, it's queer literature, it's a queer romance or whatever. And so we had this really interesting conversation about like the significance of these labels that we apply to books that I thought was really compelling.
Well, the one way that I think YA it does become a good label is because by giving something the label YA, you can't give it any of those other labels.
Totally.
Basically, I'm reading this book right now that is queer, like romance, YA.
Yeah.
That's called More Happy Than Not. And it's super interesting. It takes place in the Bronx, and it has a male protagonist, and his dad committed suicide, and he had tried to kill himself, and it's like
this is YA.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's really depressing, but also uplifting in its way. Mm-hmm. But like, because it's YA, it mm-hmm. then doesn't have to be categorized as any of these.
So interesting.
Other things. All right, my last one. Mm-hmm. Is Negro Land by Margot Jefferson. I feel like this is getting a lot of buzz also. It's a memoir by a woman who grew up sheltered and privileged as a black community in Chicago. And it's basically about her experience there not being part of what was perceived as like the black mainstream.
And it's nonfiction.
And it's not. It's a memoir. Yeah. So those are our reading things holdovers.
Scoop them up.
Scoop them up. Read them. Yeah.
And we'll be right back.
So we are not parents.
Ooh, do you think that this is like breaking news? TMZ exclusive right here on Heritage Radio Network. We do not have kids. But we know people who do.
Tons of them. Brothers even. Yes. You would be shocked by how close we are to people who have children.
And we do a lot of like, but how do you figure all of this out? How do you decide what you need? And the answer so often is bye-bye baby. It turns out, of another thing we did not know because we do not have kids, of all of the baby stores out there, bye-bye
baby. In the baby galaxy.
Bye-bye baby is the hip one. Like, I seriously ask your friends.
Have the best jogging strollers, yes. The like video monitors. All
they have the self-installing car seats, all the crazy stuff, and they also have the basic stuff. So it's like the spot to go for expecting mothers. Part of the reason people love them so much is because they hire so many mothers to work in their stores.
People who've gone through this, people who know what you need and what you don't need.
Which mompreneurs.
Mompreneurs. And I think the like what you don't need thing is such a key thing. Another thing that they do that helps with that is their registry is super social oriented. Mm-hmm. So your friends and family members who do have like all the tips on this can share that and make sure you're like nailing that thing. So that
you're like, girl, don't get that diaper pail. You will still be able to smell those stinky diapers. Get this one. That's
bye bye baby. Make sure you get the right diaper pail.
That's right.
Yeah, totally.
You're welcome, bye bye baby marketing department.
Yeah.
All right. Go check them out. There's probably a bye bye baby by you where you can make an appointment online to meet with an expert. So you just like have the appointment set to go. You're good.
Do it.
Or just start your online registry and get your
byebyebaby.com.
That's right. Bye. And we're back.
You are listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. We were talking about books, and now we're talking about wellness trends.
Oh, feels right. Feels about right.
And we have a guest who knows all of them for sure, Elisa Gold-Simon. Elisa, are you there?
Hi, guys.
Hi. There you are. Elisa is our pal and has been for some time, and she is also our resident wellness expert. She lives in LA and she knows about all the wellness things.
And by resident, we mean she lives in our brain, basically. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I'm always with you.
That's
right.
Always with us. Every time we are on one another's coast, we sit down and immediately Elisa is like, hold on, I have to, you know, take this vitamin, or I'm going to this new meditation club. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And so she keeps us in check about all of these things.
Elisa right now is doing everything that you're going to be doing in 2017 or 2018. So get ready for your future.
Exactly. So, well, it's really funny.
She is the future.
We were having a conversation about.
And it's female.
Great. We were having a conversation, Eric and I were, about tech reporters who had been like reporting on tech before tech was so buzzy. We're talking about Walt Mossberg in particular, and how he had been doing it when it was like
not cool at all.
Why would you ever
write
about tech? And I said, what do you think is the thing now that it's like isn't as big of a thing but is going to be like that? And you said wellness, and I think you were right.
Yeah, totally.
I think Elisa is going to be, you know, the grandmother of all wellness when we're old.
It's totally true.
I want to be a grandmother already. Okay. I want to be a 32-year-old grandmother.
I knew that about you.
You were the first person who taught us about oil pulling.
Yes. Oh my God, I forgot that you were the first. You totally were. We sat down in a Mexican restaurant and you were like, I've been using oil as mouthwash.
Can you tell other people oil pulling? The people who still don't know somehow. I don't know how they've missed the boat on it, but.
Yeah, they didn't have a freak LA friend who was like way ahead of the game on the oil mouthwash.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's pretty simple. You can use any kind of oil, maybe not any kind of oil, but any kind of oil that's food grade and you'd actually want to kind of, swallow, although you actually don't swallow it. So I love to use coconut oil because it's kind of the least offensive in terms of taste and smell, especially if you have to have it in your mouth for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. And typically with oil pulling, you want to get up to like 20 minutes. So for some people, it can feel like a lot, but I've also noticed that even if it's 5 minutes, mm-hmm. I feel a difference. And so I would say I've ebbed and flowed in terms of my oil pulling over the last few years. But every time I've done it, especially like during cold season, I always feel better. And I always feel like it's taking toxins out of my body, which is really the idea. So you do it first thing in the morning, you've just woken up, your mouth is full of all that like bacteria you're ready to get rid of. You swish around the oil in your mouth as you would a mouthwash. So you actually don't want to swallow it because it's actually pulling out the toxins and you kind of might feel sick to your stomach if you actually do swallow it. So you swish it around, you spit it out when you're done. You kind of want to spit it like directly into the trash as opposed to your kind of piping, for example, down the kitchen sink. Because actually, as you know, with oil, when it heats up, it'll be liquefied. But especially with coconut oil, as it cools off, it'll harden. So you don't want to like clog your drain with all your oil falling. Yeah. And then you also want a tongue scraper because getting like you can brush it off with a toothbrush, but I think using a tongue scraper and just like scraping off the oil residue is like it's like that really satisfying feeling.
And it's also supposed to be good for gum health and dental health in general, in addition to pulling out toxins, right?
Absolutely. I've heard incredible stories about people who, you know, I remember an older friend of mine was telling me that her mother was like recommended surgery by a dentist and then spent a year oil pulling and like all of the symptoms completely disappeared. So I think, you know, I'm not going to say that's going to happen, you know, for
you're not a doctor and you're not making medical claims.
But it's definitely, I feel like it's definitely, you know, got many, many benefits, and there's a reason. It's existed for a long time, and I believe I'm correct in saying it comes from Ayurvedic kind of medical system of thought. And so it's, you know, it's tried and true in terms of a benefit.
So what is the next oil pulling?
Oh, great question. I have a few thoughts here. One, because I'm trying to think simple, right?
Okay.
There's nothing beautiful about oil pulling. Like, it's cheap. Anyone can do it.
Yep.
So I kind of feel like the equivalents to that in my mind are dry brushing, definitely.
Oh, okay. Totally.
I'm not on the dry brushing tip yet. Tell me everything. Sell me on it.
Okay. Well, the reason I actually really like it is that it's like a morning routine. And so what's cool is like you get up in the morning, you're kind of like groggy and you do it first thing in the morning, like oil pulling. And when you finish, you kind of have that like, I did good by myself.
Right.
It's like a nice way to like,
which for the record is, I think, one of the best things about any of these things, whether or not you believe that they work. Like if you are doing it for yourself and it makes
self-care.
You feel good.
Yeah.
And you're like taking time for yourself. Even with oil pulling, it's like you're basically meditating because you're like sitting like
you certainly can't talk.
Can't do much else.
100%.
All of these
things. And you can
things.
Only do, like certain tasks.
Yeah.
It really slows you down.
Yes.
And I think having that moment in the morning, I'll never forget. And I totally am blanking on her name, but the woman who was CEO of Burberry, who then went to be kind of VP of retail at Apple.
Angela.
I just never want to try to pronounce her last name. But I remember her saying in this interview, maybe in Gentlewoman or something, about how she gets up at 4:30 in the morning to take a bath and read for an hour before her kids wake up. And I just thought, like, that's
chic.
The most luxurious and, like, restorative thing to do at a god-awful hour in the morning, but actually, like, potentially genius.
Totally.
I haven't tried it yet, but maybe that's a new oil pulling.
Keep us posted.
Yeah. Okay, so how does dry brushing work?
Okay, so dry brushing, you need a natural brush. The idea is you're always brushing towards your heart. So if you're starting at your feet or your legs, you're brushing up towards your heart. If you're at your arms, you're brushing in towards your heart. And if you're above your heart, you're actually brushing down towards your heart.
And you're using a hairbrush?
No, you use like a body brush, like a...
Yeah, like a
you know,
dry
like
brush,
you might
body brush.
Yeah, I've seen them. I don't know.
You might put body wash on it. It's like one of those, you know what I mean?
Okay, yes. Okay, like a dog brush.
Kind of.
It's grooming.
Like a dog brush.
I'm like, you can tell I'm over here as such a skeptic about this one. But in a year, I'll be obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I'll be we sell a body brush on our website?
This is legit good for circulation.
Just you wait. Just
sure.
Wait.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's going to affect your life.
Yeah.
But
no, I believe it. I think all these, like, it's like I said, if it makes you feel better, I'm good with all of it.
100%.
Yeah.
And I have to say, just like in terms of circulation, I mean, I think there's like the first layer of just like what's the immediate kind of feel good effect. And for me, it's like, I just feel like my body starts like my it wakes up your skin. And what's crazy is, and this is like, I feel like, you know, for a lot of people such a given now, but I think for a lot of people still brand spanking new news, which is that like your skin is your biggest organ. So if you think about literally like brushing your skin awake in the morning, like there's so many nerve endings, so many things that actually get stimulated in that.
Do you go in the bathroom and do this? Like, where do you do it?
Yeah, I go in the bathroom and do it, but I don't...
Do you stand in the shower or the bath, or you do it, like, on a bath mat or what?
Yeah, I would say I just do it in the bathroom. I don't feel like that much dry skin is coming off. It's not like going to the crane spa and getting scrubbed. Like, it's really minimal.
But you're 100% naked when you're doing it.
Yeah, definitely naked.
Okay.
Definitely naked.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, the other one, which I'm kind of into right now, is apple cider vinegar.
Totally.
Easy. Infinitely impactful in terms of like its alkalizing effects. Also, I feel like switchel is starting to become a thing at my local health food store here in LA, Lawson's. There was a guy like pushing switchel from, I don't know, Vermont with maple syrup in it. But I feel like it's going to start having a moment. It's like the new
switchel. One of our old employees was really into it, would make her own. And again, we were like, what are you doing? Because it's supposed to be good for cold and flu.
Yeah,
but
totally.
You knew it was going to come around. Okay, so but back to apple cider vinegar.
How are you using it? Are you drinking it?
So I actually, I've gone through different phases. I've definitely had like a shot in the morning, which is like a little abrasive.
Yeah. And you're supposed to mix it with water in the morning, ideally, because it's so acidic and bad for your teeth or throat.
Interesting. I haven't heard that, but that's entirely possible. I mean, I think the idea is that it's alkalizing for your digestion and for your like stomach acids, but I don't know actually what the actual what the effect is on your teeth.
Chris,
but I would
say
more recently because it's more palatable, I've been doing it as a switchel. So I actually made my own. I threw ginger in the blender with water, apple cider vinegar, and then some maple syrup, and then I just have it like in a jar in my fridge, and I just like take out a little bit and then water it down because I made kind of like a heftier stock with like a little more intensity. Pour a little bit in a cup, put some water in it, and have that be the first thing I drink in the morning. And I have to say, it feels pretty good.
I'm hearing all about alkalinity. Chris is convinced that he needs to work on his alkalinity, and he does this lemon water thing that he jokingly calls slow water. That I think
that's totally an Ayurvedic thing. Is it first thing in the morning?
Yeah. And he puts the glass of water out
overnight
at night so that it's perfectly room temperature in the morning.
That's why he calls it slow water.
Oh my god, I love that.
And he's like, gotta keep my alkalinity up. I'm like, you don't even know
and
what
he's really proud
means.
Of it.
He's so proud of it. It's insane.
You should get him on the alkaline water. Like
God, don't.
Apparently, you can get an alkaline like shower head for your shower. So shower head alkaline water. I haven't gone that far, but I've heard.
And something else that you are also very into are flower essences, which you now you kind of inadvertently started a business because you found demand. Flora Luna.
Yeah. It was the weirdest thing. I swear, it just found me. But I was. You know, I learned how to make them. I started making them for friends, and then it really happened, as some people say businesses do, but it really did happen to me where people were like, I want to write about this. I want to give these to people. And I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, do a little Squarespace site and make it a thing. And so
and
it's
is
been
it floraluna.com?
Really, it's shopfloraluna.com.
Okay. And some of them are tinctures. Are they all tinctures? What is a tincture?
They're all essentially tinctures, although tincture technically is usually when you're like basically leaving an herb to steep in alcohol over a period of time, maybe like 2 to 4 weeks. So it's actually taking out the medicinal properties of the herb and absorbing them into the alcohol so that you can ingest it. And I compare them to a tincture because it is something that you ingest. And the biggest confusion for a lot of people is that they think it's essential oil. So essential oils are really about like aroma and scent, and it's an oil that you're not ingesting. You're putting it on your body, or you're using it to kind of like activate your senses. Mm-hmm. And flower essences are something that you actually ingest, like a tincture, where you're actually it's in a dropper bottle. They're preserved with brandy, and the base is 70% water, but then a small portion of it is actually water that's been imbued or kind of imprinted with the essence of the flower. So that's a process of actually leaving a flower in water. For me, it's overnight because I learned to make them under the full moon, hence the Luna, which is a process that some people do, and some people do it in the sunshine. But my process is under the full moon, and then you take that water, and then you basically use alcohol to preserve it, and then you can take it
And you
daily,
assign
hourly, depending on what you feel like you need.
And you assign different essences for different needs in a person's life, right?
It's prescriptive. Yeah, there's prescriptive uses.
Yes. Yes. But the kind of health benefits of each flower are kind of widely documented.
Right.
So a lot of different cultures. And what's interesting too, is if you, you know, some of these flowers are actually edible. So like I work with hibiscus in, flower essence form, but you can also, you know, grind it up and cook with it. You can make it into a tea. And so there's a lot of flowers like that. But a lot of the benefits, have been, you know, kind of known for a long time and are really related to like the scent of the flower, the appearance of the flower. And so for me, I'm just kind of pulling from the history of flower essence makers, which is now, you know, a few hundred years. And so for me, that's kind of my like, handbook that I pull from. And then I just usually focus on one specific flower at a time. Other people may kind of focus on the emotion or the mental pattern, instead, but I like to kind of just work with hibiscus or just work with passion flower.
Something else that is totally having a moment, burning things.
Burning everything.
Sage, Palo Santo, what are people burning and why?
I mean, I think those two are definitely the biggies.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, this is a Native American practice. It's actually a super sacred practice, where, you know, you're burning something because the smoke is both intended to please the kind of spirits around you or the energy around you, but also to kind of expel anything that's not positive. So if you want to like clear a space that feels like heavy and bad and like it doesn't have great energy, like that's when you want to burn these things. But they also smell really nice. So I think a lot of people are using them for those practices.
Just
too.
As like incense. Okay. Can you, we went and had breakfast in LA with a friend of ours who had lived in New York for a long time. And she's been in LA for a little bit. And she looks at us and she's like, do you guys believe in crystals? And we were like, both silently shook our heads. And she goes, honestly, though, you're my only friends who don't. She was like, literally everybody that I work with believes in crystals and they blame everything on crystals or like, or
and
if
they
you're
look
having
at me
a bad
like
day,
I'm
what?
Crazy.
Or
and
not,
then, yeah.
Dream.
No, she's
not
like, if you're having, no, not blaming things, but she'll be like, they'll be like, oh, well, you didn't use that crystal. So
that I gave to you.
Yeah. So I'll go on record as not being a crystal person. I already said it, but I know sell me on crystals because I'm guessing you're into crystals.
I'm into crystals. I'm into crystals.
So and I love you for it.
I know. And I feel like, so I also, I've gotten facials from a woman named Nagin in New York who actually uses crystals as part of her practice. And I will say the reason I own so many crystals is basically her fault because I've gone, I've done facials with her and she'll like hold something over me while she's like doing a little bit of like Reiki or just like, you know, massaging me. And I like have felt something. And so I've started collecting, started learning a little bit. And I mean, it's infinite. There's literally like the longest list of different stones and gems and how they can affect things for you. So I think it's like what you're called to, but one I feel like you guys would appreciate is actually fluorite, which people, use and is believed to like kind of create a barrier and basically alkalize, if you will, the negative, kind of energy from devices and technical devices, or technology devices. So I,
so you think
really
if there's like one crystal for us, it's fluorite.
I kind of think it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
My favorite YouTube of like video of all time is the scene from The Hills when Spencer decides that all the crystals he's bought are stop working. You have to look it up. We'll post it on the internet. It's the best. He's like having
a
mental breakdown.
He spent like a lot of money on crystals.
He basically went bankrupt buying crystals for himself and then they stopped
and they've lost their powers. Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's my worst nightmare. Yeah. Going bankrupt on crystals, not them not working. But there's like, you can go so deep. It's fascinating. But there's practices of like burying them in the earth on a full moon because it's supposed to re-energize them. There's crystals that are supposed to.
You think he wasn't caring for his crystals? You think that's what was the problem?
Yeah, I think he wasn't taking care of his crystals.
Classic Spencer.
Yeah, classic.
Maybe he needed a crystal caretaker. There should be an app
love,
for that. Someone comes to your house and they like bury your crystals for you.
I do love the story about like I'm not like a believer in crystals, but I love the story element, the storytelling element.
Oh, for
of
sure,
it, and
yeah.
The idea, the sort of like conceptually.
I think the story of so much of this stuff is what's, you know, a big piece of how you connect with it.
Yes.
You know, and I think also when people have been telling these stories for so long, there's just something magical about that.
I agree. And, you know, and it is, it's just one of those things. It's like, I listened to a story on NPR recently about like the actual scientifically proven efficacy of the placebo effect.
Yeah, and, of course. Yeah.
And I'm not saying that these things are placebos, but
the power of believing in something.
Whether or not they are, it kind of doesn't matter, because if it makes you feel better, it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
And that's real. Thank you for telling us all about this.
Alisa, you're amazing.
We didn't even cover half the stuff we usually
cover. You got to come back.
At average lunch. We didn't talk about all the different types of meditation that are happening. Yeah, we didn't talk about health, wellness, and corporate culture. We're bringing you back on.
Yeah,
we
got to
finish
sure.
this conversation.
Yeah, this is just the 1.0. We'll get to the
2.0. This is 101.
Yeah,
wellness 101.
We'll get deep.
Hippie wellness 101.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You have been listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica, the last episode of season 2. So go back and catch up. Find us on iTunes or Stitcher and do a deep dive.
The other thing you should do in preparation for season 2, season 3, send us questions.
Please. Or topics you want us to talk about, or things you're just like itching for an answer to, and we will field them. We're going to be better about that stuff in season 3.
Totally. Season 3 goals.
That's a season 3 resolution.
Yeah, totally.
In the meantime, you should go shopping on ofakind.com, and you should sign up for our 10 Things newsletter while you're there.
And definitely shop.
Yeah. That's the show.
That's the show. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.